Welcome back to Footy Classified. It's been a wild season, been a wild 12 months for our next guest. It's been a wild footy club this year, the Fremantle Dockers, but things are turning the right way for Ross Lyon and timing's everything. Thanks for joining us in the hot seat.
Pleasure, Hutchie.
It has been an unusual year for your footy club. Slow start, brilliant next block of games, a slow mid again, and you've come out of the break again a better team. Have you worked out what team you are yet?
Well, the strategy last year and the club really statement was we recognised it was a transition period, and we came out of pre-season. We probably played a couple of older teams, but those guys, it's always that challenge of integrity of selection. So we didn't get moving there. We had a bit of a blend, but then from there we recalibrated and we won 6 out of the next 7 with our core senior players really leading the way, led by Fife, who's been magnificent. And then we really fell in a hole for 3 weeks, but again, just got back to some fundamentals, some more debutants, and we've been in really 3 competitive games. I thought our performance down Geelong was magnificent, and I thought the Saints, when you see what they did to Richmond on Friday night, was full of merit, and probably if we didn't slaughter the ball, you get those 4 points. So, and then on the weekend, we jumped out of the blocks, and look, both clubs, I think, the Kangaroos and us, and Brad's in a similar position, lots of young players and inconsistencies within games. But I think both teams would walk away thrilled with their young players and the direction of their clubs.
We're going to speak a bit about the redirection and the rewiring, the re-plumbing, the restumping.
Well, they're Brad's words.
And the early selection early in the year. But you mentioned Fife. Yesterday he looked like the player that he was. You've been a little bit defensive of him along the journey this year with Terry Wallace and others about his form. Yeah. And understandably, he's had a fair road back from a serious injury. Is he becoming now the player again and the leader you thought he could be, and him indicating he wants to stay, I guess, is part of that too, is it?
Yeah, the whole combination. Without going into specifics, I'm protective of all my players. And that's the role of a coach. I mean, you need to change behaviour, but support at the right time. So Nathan, he was a significant leg injury over a period of time, I think from the back end of 15 and then 16. So it was 2 breaks, and We took the long-term approach, and he didn't miss a beat over summer. He was voted in unanimous captain. But it was always going to take a while to come to hand, and he was starting to do that in that period where we won 6 out of 7. And then he copped a chest injury, which I thought was just titled as bruising, but it turned out to be a bit deeper than that. And you could see he was distracted with it and sore, and he gets targeted a lot. So we put him out to pasture for a little bit, played him forward against St Kilda, but we saw signs that he was physically and mentally ready to go again. So I texted him earlier in the week, I think on a Tuesday night, and said, mate, get yourself set for the midfield. I think you're ready to go. And he vindicated that. He led magnificently. I think it was we all know it was his best game for the year. And we think he wants to stay with the Dockers, and I think that's close. But I always bow out of that sort of situation.
So the accepted version is that you would have liked him to be captain last year, but the players voted for another player. And and one of the reasons was that they felt Mundy would be a better leader, and that there might have been an element of selfishness as so many champions having their game to Fife's game. Is he different to the player who didn't get the player's vote last year?
Well, I think I learned a lot of lessons out of that as well, because really Matthew was still there, and that transition piece didn't go as well as we thought it would. And I think it was very difficult for David Mundy. David Mundy got voted in because at the end of the day, the players thought he was going to be the best captain.
But
I had a view that it was Nathan, but we are a democracy, believe it or not. And the players, we had a strong debate, and it was really marginal anyway, the vote. But at the end of the day...
But what's changed, Ross? What made them
Nathan, for me or...
For the players who obviously didn't...
Well, you'd have to ask the players, but he was unanimous this week. So they also, when they give reasons why. So in the end, Nathan said, well, how do you see me? And there was some feedback within that. He's certainly not, what was the term you used? Selfish. It was never selfish.
No, I'm not... That was the
vernacular. That's the trade that he was labelled with.
That many champions have, let's
face it. Yeah, I think every league football player needs to be selfish in their preparation, but it's the ability to sort of bring others along with you. And when you're so singular and focused, and I think Kane was one of those preparers as well, you've got to make sure that you get outside of yourself. And I think he recognised that feedback. He worked hard on it, and to the point it was all but 4 had him as the number one selection. So we all need feedback. We all seek feedback, and he acted on it. And he's been a wonderful leader this year. And I think David Mundy, to his credit, And that's the calibre of person he is. He would have liked to be captain again. He heard the players vote, and he, as that happened, he said, "Nathan, I'm right behind you, and I'll support you fully." And that's what's occurred.
Ross, so, sorry, go ahead.
You lost to Port Adelaide in round two by 89. It was reported that on the Tuesday or the Monday or the Tuesday, you sat down with your leaders and you wanted to relinquish some of the control that you had given to them. Is that how it went down? And can you explain to us that what went on?
When was that, leading in or post?
Post the round two game versus Port Adelaide. It was reported, I think.
The inference
lots
was,
of things are reported.
The inference was, it might have been Damien that reported at the time, Damien Barrett, that you'd backed in the older players and they hadn't measured up in the first two rounds and you had to go down a different path on the basis that the senior players had wanted you to back the older players in.
Yeah, I think there was an element of that, but it was really about what I learned out of last year was you've got to communicate change. So as early last year when we were transitioning the youth in, and we had a number of really loyal players and great campaigners in Tendai and Matty De Boer, those sort of guys who were getting squeezed out for, and we're getting the benefit now for Langdon and Blakely and Waller. And we probably didn't communicate that. They said, look, just bring us along for the ride and we'll support it. But we probably left it. They had to read between the lines. It was a very difficult situation. So I learned from that and we learned from that as a club. So as we're going down that path again, we wanted to make it really clear. And we just said, we just got them in. And said, guys, this is where we're at and this is what we need to do. And we need you to lead and support those young players. That's what that meeting was. So it was just transparency and communication. So I was really learning a lot about bringing people along for the ride.
Speaking of young players, Ross, I'll cut the fairy tale debut yesterday of Ryan and Niehaus. Just his role, you've told him Mundy's come down crook. He's got the nod early in the morning. So would Mundy have played this role on Tarrant? Is he the ideal replacement?
Yeah, then? Mundy was in red hot form in the midfield, but we'd like to get Nathan going in the midfield, and David's an older player, so there was a lot of debate amongst the coaches. Look, the kids played down back the whole time. You're setting him up to fail, and can we recalibrate? But we thought it would be a bit small, and, you know, Tarrant is an All-Australian defender, so he's got great character. He's a big man, a competitor. He's put on 10 kilos since he's been with us, and we said we really defined simply what you need to do. And, look, he probably exceeded expectations, but he's dog-hungry. He builds his life off the field, and you can't quarantine that attitude of trying to build your life off it comes on field. So he competed, we knew he'd do that, and he's a real football player. And he needs to do it again, but you've got to grab opportunities. He's grabbed one, and because, as you know, we're analysing our list and we're continuing to make decisions, he's certainly built an opportunity for himself going forward, I would think.
You spoke with great pride after the game a bit about that list management program and your recruiting and rookie system, etc., and you've done it in previous weeks. Is there a slight, not dig, but disappointment in the system that others, the two new clubs in GWS and Gold Coast, had so many advantages and you've had to do it the hard way? Did I read that in?
No, I was really messaging to myself and our list manager and our CEO and our president and our players just the reality of the situation. There is a narrative that we're all saying GWS are going to win five in a row and they've got all the best kids and we're all playing for second. I think if you have that mentality, you can back off your intensity of development and make excuses for yourself. So it's really a message about to our players, our club, myself, just to keep that intensity. And it's not about draft picks. It's about seeing possibility and not what other people you may condition yourself to with the narrative going around. That was the messaging.
So you said to me at the start of this year that even if Fremantle don't make finals for the next five seasons, or four seasons, you will be coach until the end of this contract. Today you were thrown up on SEN as the potential coach of the Collingwood Football Club next year.
That'd be a hot seat, wouldn't it? Make this look easy.
Has an approach come your way?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Can you categorically rule yourself out?
Yeah, and I mean, people are going to draw parallels to me leaving St Kilda, but my contractual situation was vastly different and I had a clause in there and both parties had a clause in to vacate that contract, and I exercise mine. So there's no such clause in this. It's a marriage where I'm fully committed to them and they're fully committed to me. So it's starkly different. I'm flattered by it because, you know, round two, the game had left me behind. So now I'm a candidate for one of the biggest clubs in the country. So that's flattering, but it's unrealistic.
Do you think you're universally respected in football, and particularly in Melbourne where you coached, if there's one query in the commentary that swirls around you, it's the question over whether you're a rebuild coach.
Yeah.
Do you hear that? And how do you answer that?
Well, I don't feel I need to. It really seems like coaching's teaching. And it's harder to teach an old dog new tricks. So coaching's teaching. I'd suggest the two clubs I've been at, I've been able to teach them to play to a system and develop those players, young or old. And that's true at Fremantle. We played in the grand final in our second year, shifted them to a vastly different system. And out of that first draft, Lachie Neal played, Cairn Sutcliffe played in that, Lee Spur and Tom Sheridan was first emergency, and Lachie Neal's gone on to be a BNF winner. So, you know, objectivity is the search for the truth, regardless of your own prejudice. It's not about fairness, and I'd conclude that a lot of those conclusions have some influence of their prejudice.
We're going to ask you about Harley Bennell, or Bennell, yeah. Who's evidently...
I'm not sure how to pronounce it.
Evidently close to playing. He's tested, no doubt, your patience at times. You've been unbelievably supportive as a footy club, even through the I wouldn't call them mishaps or misdemeanors, or the challenges you've had have been really clear. You used strong language early in the year when you linked the talk around his calf to race, and you've been, in fact, do you stand by that language along the way, and do you feel that
when it's a black kid and a white kid with a calf? Yeah, that's how I felt at the time. There's clearly been players that other clubs with long-term calf issues, and this is an aponeurosis, and it's really, I think, Ben Reed, is it, at Collingwood?
Yep.
He missed 12 months with a calf injury. So, look, Harley, you make your bed, you lie in it. It's hard to change perceptions, and clearly on the Gold Coast, he behaved in a manner at times that put him under pressure and saw him on the front page of a national paper.
Is it his last chance, or is your support now unconditional?
No, he's been... Everyone gets unconditional support. We always say we'll support you till we can't. So Harley trains in... I see it on a day-to-day basis. Has he had some slips? And the biggest slips where he's really self-destructing when his calf blew up again when he was about to play. And he had a two-week period where he had a meltdown, where he was really struggling. But it was self-harming. There was no harm to anyone else. So he needed to get some support and gather himself and reboot. And he's done that. And he should play this week at Peel. So he's an enormous talent. Just seeing him train, we all comment on how magnificent he looks when he's got the ball in hand and how he trains. And he's been an incredibly hard trainer. But everyone needs support. But you're only as good as your next moment, all of us. So, you know, he needs to sack a lot of good moments going forward. So, and he's clear that he's not in the position of a first-year player who's had no misdemeanours, so to speak, in the past. He understands he's walking a tightrope. But for me, he's been fantastic, bar that self-harm period.
Ross, I want to get back to you and your coaching. I listen to Gary Lyon, who sits in that chair normally, and he has a real burning desire or a thing inside his stomach that he never played in a premiership side. What about you as a premiership coach? Do you ever sit back at times and think of that Milne bounce of the ball or the toe pokes and all those moments that you missed out so far on being a premiership coach?
Well, you've got to be phase feedback, isn't it? You've got to be good enough to get it done. We didn't get it done. 2009, we didn't execute. 2010, we were the underdog and really fought on. Couldn't have been proud of that group. And it's not over. I'm there fighting. We want to win a premiership at Fremantle. I've certainly been given time. There's some challenges innate in that, but we're building and I'm determined. But, you know, to go and have breakfast with Nick D'Alessandro today, there's a lot of things that come out of those periods, more than a cup. But would I like to be a premiership coach? Yeah, but... I certainly sit here thinking I've worked as hard as I can, but I need to get better.
Hang around, if you wouldn't mind. We've got some more footy, broader issues to talk with you after the break. And Caro's Arrow's up next, and there's a hint of suggestion that you may feature in it, which will be extraordinary, and that's after this, right here on Footy Classified. There's plenty more I want to have a collective discussion about. One of them, I'll get you in on this too, Caro, is while you've been away, we've seen... mental health become a serious issue in football. We've had three players since you've been gone, Fasolo, Cloak and
Alex Fasolo was
Boyd.
The week I went away. Yep. And then of course, two more from the Western Bulldogs and other players now talking about issues they've had in the past. I mean, how different is it? It's so different even from 10 years ago as a senior footy coach, isn't it, how you deal with players and their anxieties and other issues?
Yeah, it is. Look, since my time as an assistant at Sydney, we had a psychologist... that was there, a clinical psych that the players could be sent to, because as a coach, you're not equipped to deal with anything. And in my time at St Kilda, we had Sean Richardson, who's basically 3 days a week, and we've got Kim Mercer, who's, we're only one or two clubs that is a full-time clinical sports psych employed, that the players can go and share their issues with internally without it coming back to the coaches unless they want. But it's a high-performance industry for coaches and players, and what comes with that is, you know, incredible amount of scrutiny and pressure and anxiety, and it goes with the territory. But the Twitter and the Instagram and the players, it's a new paradigm that it's unregulated and
so players... So do you treat players differently now than you might have even 5 years ago?
I think because I'm more experienced and, you know, everyone, it's not one size fits all. Everyone's got their own personality. You've got to understand what they can handle and their different breaking points and how you work with them. And there's no doubt that experience helps. So, but there's more challenges. The scrutiny's getting greater, the money's getting bigger, more players around the players. There's more players wrapped around them and concerned with their careers and probably getting involved in their careers. So, yeah, that whole wheel for the athlete is more complicated than it's ever been. And we're seeing the outcomes with mental health issues.
What about the pressure on coaches, Ross? We just had a segment here where we're talking about the futures of Nathan Buckley and Rodney Eade. They haven't lost their jobs yet, but we're talking about who could possibly take over.
Yeah.
I've heard you speak of Paul Roos, I think earlier in the year, sounding out Paul Roos on...
Well, he rang me.
Oh, he rang you, he sorry. So what about yourself then? Do you have a release, something that you need to do to sort of keep your sanity as a coach?
I tend to work. I'm more balanced than I've ever been, and that goes with it. And you delegate more than you do as a young coach, and you trust your assistants more, and that helps you keep a balance and get to game day fresher and not as crazy. But if you break it down, the population in Australia, I'm 1 in 1.4 million. For every 1.4 million, there's one AFL coach. So it's a coveted job. Stress and pressure comes with that, and it's about you try and keep fit, you try and keep moving, but we're not saving babies' lives. You've got to keep it in perspective.
Just one more. Just on Connor Blakely, could he have been looking for a release from the pressures of training, or is that a cop-out for Connor Blakely in terms of missing training, going surfing?
I think it's a cop-out. Yeah, we put that in the context. They come off the bye where he was in Noosa surfing for a week. And they're letting their hair down, they come back. And then every week, if we play Sunday, they have Monday off, they're in half day Tuesday, full day Wednesday, full day Thursday off, half day Friday, and 4 hours Saturday morning or 3 hours.
So it's
pretty well.
I'm happy with it.
I don't need them for much more than that. I've always driven off field being more than a footballer because you need some, but I don't want to produce tragedy. So we drive. At one stage last year, we had 22 undergraduate players in undergraduate courses. So that makes you feel good. You want them going out the door in good shape.
I want to get your thoughts on this. Luke Beveridge had a comment on Mark Hutchings on Johannesson, the treatment. He called one of his actions a cowardly act. Now, you had one of the most niggly taggers we've ever seen. Your response, do you think those actions there are cowardly?
I think cowardly is a strong word, and I think... I don't comment on other. You win them and wear them. You dish it out. You play within the rules, and you leave it to the people to umpire. So we all move on. But Luke's entitled to his opinion.
On former players, two of your favourite sons clearly want to play on next year in Nick Riebolt and Lee Montagna. They don't know, and I think it's getting a bit frustrating. What would you think they should do?
Well, it's very difficult to comment on them as Fremantle coach, but both of them are close friends, really. It's easy to become a friend after you stop coaching them, and we went through some great campaigns. I haven't got all the facts in front of me. Clearly, St Kilda has list management, and it's up to them to handle it. But I think if you're in control of your own destiny, you make the decision yourself rather than someone else make it for you. But both of them are playing very good footy. I think Lee Montagna and Nick were almost best on the ground. In a real sense, they're integral, but I don't know exactly where that football club's at with their list and where they're heading.
Have they asked your opinion?
Have they? Nick and I have had some loose conversations, nothing in detail.
Ross, were you able to attend Gillon McLaughlin's dinner?
No, he'd have a nice wine cellar.
I'm just wondering, the way the rules and the game's being umpired, do you frustrated by that? I know the holding the ball rule, there's a lot of confusion about those sorts of things. Where do you sit on
it? I think in previous years there's been more angst, I would think. it's at a nice equilibrium. I think it's incredibly... I never castigate umpires. I think I was taught that when I was playing under 10s by my father. And I think we've got to model the behaviour for the rest. You clearly get disappointed. Hopefully, I'm only as good as my next moment. But you get disappointed when they do get castigated. I've been to a losing grand final where the ball's hit the post and didn't mention it. So I think it's in a reasonable place, but not without challenge.
Ross, we appreciate you staying around after a great win on the weekend. Thanks for joining us and good luck for the rest of the season for the Fremantle Dockers.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Ross Lyon, the Fremantle coach, joining us on Footy Classified, having to put up with an arrow for his troubles too. He handled it magnificently.
I deserve an arrow.
Good call, bad call. Still to come and a whole lot more ahead on Footy Classified.